Sometimes I doubt your commitment to zombie takeout.
After five Resident Evil movies, I think I've proven my commitment to zombie takeout.
Welcome to episode 235 of Zombie Takeout. I may be laughing a bit under my breath, while I'm talking here, because you went a little off book with that.
Oh, did I?
Got me a little off guard with that one. Anyway, before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of listener submitted, or should I say a lot of listener submitted. And kind of a first for us, we've heard back from the makers of the film we reviewed last time. But
we have heard from filmmakers, or at least representatives.
Oh yes. We did hear from the owner of the company that distributed I Declare War.
Yeah.
But this time we've heard from the director and one of the stars. But before we get to that, in reference to the last episode, 234, 50 Shades of Way, Jen Miller and Danny Meeks both complimented the title. Jen went so far as to call it pure genius.
Whoa.
And I just wanted to point out that that was all you.
Whoa.
And it was a rare case where we didn't debate the title. Because, the way it usually works is we both come up with ideas for titles, and we both usually have one that we really like, and we argue until one of us gives in, and the other title wins.
Well, the weird thing about that was you liked it better than I did, and it was mine.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I guess there's that one. It wasn't my favorite.
There was no debate that time. I heard that title and immediately, that's it.
I was like, all right, you like that one? Okay, I guess we'll use it.
And apparently very successful. In addition to Jen and Danny, we also heard from Casey Chapman, star of last week's movie, Mother's Milk. He left a comment on our site, zombietakeout.com, and said, "Thanks so much for the review. If anyone is interested in watching, you can find it on iTunes, Amazon DVD, Amazon Instant, Google Play, Vimeo, and Vudu." And he also contacted you, I believe.
Yes, he did. He had confirmed that they had not heard of or seen Perfect Host, either one of them.
That's the David Hyde Pierce movie that we referenced. It's called The Perfect Host.
Yes. And it's, of course, has nothing to do with lactation or anything like that. But it is the relationship between the hostage taker and hostage. They have a very bizarre way that they come about in that too. But of course, we reviewed this, so if you've been listening to our episodes,
well, we reviewed it last year, so
yeah, I know.
If you're new to the show, you probably missed it
like 30 episodes ago or something like that. But anyway, we also talked about Game of Thrones in that episode and other lactation, and
I don't remember the lactation in Game of Thrones, and I've seen every episode.
Dude, you brought it up.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, we didn't actually see it, but we saw the kid. Yeah.
Right. It was about the kid who was too old.
Yeah, the Eric.
Still breastfeeding.
Right. Okay.
He says, also, I remember, and I apologize, Casey, if you didn't want me to read this, but I mean, it's good. Also, I remember early on in rehearsals, Ed was pissed with Game of Thrones for the lactating scene. Ha ha. And again, in American Horror Story Season 2, which aired while we were in post.
We beat him to the punch, I guess.
It's weird, and of course, we're going to get into that with Donnie Darko, of course, about weird synchronicities. I don't know. I didn't. But anyway, they shot in 2012. I believe their IMDb should say 2014.
Okay, that's what I had assumed at first, because it was in festivals at the moment. It's in festivals right now, so I assumed it was shot, it was put out last year,
but it was released in 14. Officially, or I guess just like DVD and everything came out in December, but I remember them doing festivals earlier in the year, and I believe they won some they took some awards over
Nice.
Overseas. So yeah, we do have two more films in the can. Sadly, neither fit your mold at all. Oh well.
I will definitely be checking them out, as I mentioned last time, because I would love to see more of Ed Pianki's work, and Casey Chapman and Mackenzie Bigglesworth were brilliant, so obviously I want to see them in
they
more.
They can't all have trauma and lactation scenes, but, you know, what can we do? Anyway, that's mine, not his words.
Okay.
He continues, our second a drama, I guess you could call a character study or perhaps a love triangle, should be finished with post-production in a few months, be screening it at, well, at our local theater here in Chicago, the Music Box. And there are similarities with all three. Central male character struggling with sexual fetish, I suppose, although those are just grounds to flesh out other stories. Residuum, my character, is into autoerotic asphyxiation. Asymptote, you said?
Asymptote. It was used, actually, in the intro from last week. It's in the second trailer. It's in his big, long speech about ravioli.
They just finished as much worse problem than the first two. Don't want to spoil it. It's rather odd because Ed is the most normal, nice guy you'd ever meet. Mm-hmm. He was a lawyer for 30 years before pursuing his film passion. Anyhow, really enjoyed the two of you smartly discussing the film. Really, really appreciate it. Feel free to ask me anything about the movie. And yeah, thanks. Pleasure was all ours, Casey.
And just to finish that, asymptote is, and I guess I'm pronouncing that correctly, it's a geometry thing about a curve extending. I don't really remember all the details. But yeah. As
the
I mentioned
moment
last time,
I've been waiting for is Ed's email to us.
As I mentioned last time, math isn't exactly my strong suit, which Ed takes me to task for. We got an email from Edward Pianki, director of Mother's Milk. He said, "Hey, Scotto and Uncle John. This is Ed Pianki, director of Mother's Milk. Just wanted to say thank you so much for your review. Glad you enjoyed the film, and I want to say that it was great hearing your thoughts and ideas. Also, I want to take this opportunity to address a few questions you had. First, and I have to say that this is really the only thing in the review I really cringed at, and Casey may have already sent you a tweet or Twitter or whatever it is about this, as I sent him a little piece on it, is the questioning of clause math on the whiteboard. As an actuary..."
And that's the part that made me almost fall out of the chair.
"I was very careful to make sure is correct. From a thematic perspective, perhaps the more significant detail was his choice of Down syndrome, as an example, as this is tied to the last scene about hereditary psychosis and the theme of free will and determination in general. I did not catch that. Maybe I should have been paying more attention to that than the math. That said, there's no way I would ever live down a math mistake for my actuary colleagues, so I was very careful about what was shown and said regarding the math. Interestingly, that scene was the toughest scene for Casey, and he actually had to use crib notes, as the subject matter made no sense to him. And there's my defense, because if it made no sense to the actor who was saying it, again, as I've said, math not my strong suit, so it made no sense to me either.
Why call out the math?
I don't know. It just seemed off, but I was wrong. It was kind of weird, as he was able to nail many of the intense emotional scenes seemingly effortlessly, and this little math lecture caused all kinds of problems. Okay, so, you know, my bad. I will defer, especially since it's an actuary. I was wrong.
And it is funny I was listening to that episode earlier today, just to see, you know, to respond to the emails and stuff, that, yeah, you could hear me saying, if only I could have, like, the disclaimer playing over the opinions that you expressed are of Uncle John's and not of Scotto.
You were distancing yourself as fast as you possibly could from all of my criticisms of the
because it was Greek to me as he was saying it. Mm. I've heard it twice now, and it was still like, yeah. Okay, Sir Words, gotcha, good.
I think I'm just so in the habit of nitpicking any kind of science in a film that I just overanalyze things and don't realize when I'm over my head.
Right, I was just going to say, but when you're in over your head, dude,
yeah.
Holy shit.
I'm usually on the money, everyone's hit or miss.
It could have been bullshit, for all I know, and I mean, I have no idea.
Right.
But, you know, finding out that he's an actuary, yeah, I was like, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that's the point where I said, okay, my bad.
Because, I mean, I know actuaries. They would bust his balls. He would never live it down.
Yeah. He continues, as to influences, I can't recall the name of the film you mentioned as having come out around the same time that you saw similarities in, but I had never heard of the film nor seen it. It was, as we said, The Perfect Host, starring David Hyde Pierce.
It was a very small release too,
Yeah.
wasn't
I didn't know anything about it until I noticed it on Netflix and saw
it?
David Hyde Pierce in a, movie about a killer. So I had to see it.
You're right. It may have just been a major city release
Probably.
only, and then
Yeah,
Netflix
it was
picked
probably
it
a
up.
limited release. He goes on, Psycho, as you mentioned, was for sure an influence. Also, Jean Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast was a big influence. I should see some Jean Cocteau at some point. He's kind of a legend.
Now, is he one of the Cocteau twins?
That's who they name themselves after. And I watched and discussed it at length with Casey and Mackenzie before we started shooting. That's Beauty and the Beast. Also, Haneke's Benny's video, I'm guessing on the name of the director, was a big influence, especially with respect to the cinematography, as this was a film I discussed at length with Craig Harmer, our cinematographer, before we shot, and for sure there was stuff in there that influenced what we did. I just looked up Benny's video. I'd never heard of it. Looks really interesting. I'm definitely going to have to check that one out too. Also, it's been interesting to hear the reactions to the lactating porn and nipple biting scenes. Each of these scenes is really Claude's POV scenes. And I'm a little surprised that folks think they are gratuitous. The shot of the bitten nipple on the mattress is what he sees before he sort of comes to his senses, realizes what he's doing, and stops. In my mind, it needed to be a visceral image to have that effect. When we first edited the scene, I was apprehensive about it, but once we decided to eliminate the audio from the beginning of the scene, I thought it worked much better, as there was the impression that Claude was sort of on autopilot, probably getting ready to do to Kim what he had done to the first victim, but the combination of seeing the nipple, seeing her bloody breast, made a switch go off in his mind, at which time the audio kicks in and he hears her screaming, recognizes her as a person, and realizes what he's doing. Anyway, that's what I was thinking when I decided to leave the image in the final cut. And having read this, I totally get what he was going for, and I think it works. I think the
It's
issue.
funny, you didn't like the juxtaposition of the trauma in with the serious
Well, I think
drama.
the issue there was the fact that I am a Troma fan. If I was not familiar with Troma, I would not have made that association, because Troma is notorious for, prosthetic body parts randomly
Right.
used for, cinematic gore. If I'd never seen a Troma film or anything of that style, I think it would have had the desired effect.
I kind of liked the juxtaposition, though. I mean, it's just so batshit crazy, and that's what he was.
Yeah. I gotta stick to my gun on the lactation scene, though. That was a bit excessive.
Of course it was.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, he finishes up. Another thing that critics seem to like to do is point out scenes that they think could have been left on the cutting room floor. It was interesting that you guys had one or two of these, but the other kind of had a reason for leaving it in, so I thought that was pretty cool. As a director, I often cringe when I hear someone say, "Well, that scene did nothing to move the story forward, so it should have been cut." Moving the plot forward is only one and really not the most important function of a scene. Creating and maintaining an appropriate pace and rhythm to the film is much more important. Anyway, I digress.
I was hoping I was going to get a compliment for the genius of my, comparison of Arrested Developments between the two, but oh well.
And I totally understand his, him getting annoyed at that. I edit this show every week, and I w wouldn't want someone to come along and tell me how to edit it. So, I totally get that. Anyway, he finishes up. Thanks again. I really appreciate your kind words about and generous rating of our film, Ed. And I notice he doesn't say anything about the ending, because we had some questions there. I like that he apparently wants to leave it open.
Oh well.
Because, we had some questions as to what was going to happen afterwards to her and what the appointment was. They didn't address those.
Well, I guess in a way he does when he talks about the Down syndrome in the beginning.
Well, yes. I may perhaps, I was right when the appointment was for an abortion.
Yeah, well, or just the odds of the baby having the same,
Well, I can kind of possibly see, what was his name? The Claude,
Yes.
possibly be having a bit of that spectrum,
Right.
and then also the kid could have his, psychosis. Anyway, now that we're finally through with the most epic listener submitted section we've ever
Yes.
had, on to this
Yes.
week's movie, which is from 2001, Donnie Darko. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by imaginary friends. They're not just fun, sometimes they can save your life and kill your family in the process.
And also brought to you by time travel. If it existed, there'd be no Highlander 2.
Or Batman and Robin, or lots of other films.
Wow, those are just bad films. Highlander 2 is an abomination.
Highlander 1 wasn't that great. Anyway, we've talked about that a couple of years ago.
However, it would explain how they got the casting for this film.
Yeah, true.
Because almost everyone went on to do some other
And a couple
things.
of them were already kind of big when they made the film.
Well, true. And but some,
Yeah, went on to get much bigger.
this is their first. This
Yeah.
is the beginning for a lot of them. All right, so we begin with our anti-hero Holden kind of
I'd actually never read that book. I might have to one
No.
of these. No. I was afraid to for several years.
You thought you were going to become an assassin?
Yeah. I had a bit of a fixation on a celebrity, and I didn't want to, do like others have.
That happens. Anyway, it begins with our hero waking up in the middle of the street. He's not sure how he got there. I guess he just kind of sleepwalks, and he apparently has a lot of trouble mentally, and he's been seeing a professional. And the family, there's tension there, but there's they really never get to the core of it, I guess. They kind of
Well, it's suggested that Donnie is the tension, his mental illness.
true. It is Donnie. Donnie is the tension. You're right. And he's not a loner in school though or anything. He has a couple friends. He's actually kind of considered the cool kid, He's got the name Donnie Darko, and he.
Love that they called that out in the movie.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, continue.
And, it's one night when he sees this bunny.
With kind of a skull for a face.
Right, it's about, well, he's, what, about
And
six
not,
foot tall
yeah,
bunny.
standing on his hind legs and he has about six something.
Yeah, skull face, and he sees this bunny, and he beckons him to sleepwalk. And while he's out, a jet engine crashes into the house,
Into his room specifically.
specifically into his room. Now, I'm seeing this, and well, we'll get into
Yeah,
that in a
let's just
bit.
get through the plot summary first.
Okay.
Because that's enough of a challenge.
So he they make the remark that he's cheated death. His father does at least, that he's just amazed that if he hadn't been sleepwalking, he would have been in there, he would have been a goner instantly. And which also a Twilight Zone episode was very similar to this too.
Yes.
He goes back into school. Weird things just start happening though from this point on. He keeps seeing this bunny. He gets told to do certain things. He's not
By the
sure
bunny.
why.
And destructive things.
Yeah, very destructive things. It's like he's just not in control anymore almost. Or he does lose control where he is possessed at points, it seems like. And he causes a flood in the school. He burns a house down. I'm trying to think of some of the other things that he did that he. I think those are the two big ones, really. The two big acts that he needed. And why these things were done. One of them was that there is this motivational speaker who sort of ingratiates himself into this private school, which
Creepy
was
motherfucker.
really fucking weird because it's supposed to be like a Christian, private school, and here he is talking this new agey bullshit. But he's getting them off, their path. And one of the destructive acts is, of course, his house, and it reveals he has a very ugly secret. And of course, that's what lifts, the scales for everyone's eyes and sees him for who he is. What else we have? We have the summary of what happens to each character in this too. It's if you notice, it's very dis it's not a very linear plot
No,
if you think about it.
not at all. Primer is almost linear compared to this.
Yeah, well,
No, Primer is a bad example because Primer is the granddaddy, but.
right. Primer is a series of loops. This
Yeah.
is just one big
This
loop.
is just one big one, yeah.
Because the thing is, and you know what? I'll tell this on the surface for what happened here. That someone came back in time to get him out of his house. And of course, as I said on Facebook earlier today, there's no way we can do this without spoiling the end. Because, I mean, it's a loop. You can't just leave out parts of the loop. So, yes, somebody from the future went back to, and this is just on the face value of the plot here, got him out of his bed that night, and something just, it caused a rift in the space-time continuum. That there's a vortex forming right where the almost a paradox, if you will.
It ends with a giant paradox, which we'll get to.
Right. And it won't sustain for long, and he can't be alive anymore is really what it comes down to. In the process, there's all of these clues left behind for him to figure out what the hell is going on, and this crazy old lady who stands in the middle of the road and waits for somebody to write her something in the mail
Who turns out to be a bit of a physics genius.
turns out to be a physics genius and wrote a book on time travel, and it's all very too coincidental for a reason. It's very intentionally coincidental.
Yeah.
So
But that's
right,
hilarity ensues.
they follow the mystery, hilarity ensues.
Now, this was filmed in 28 days. Interesting, considering the movie. The movie 28 Days. On a budget of $4.5 million, it almost went straight to home video, but was publicly released by Drew Barrymore's production company, Flower Films.
Well, the craziest thing about this is this was filmed in the summer of 2000. I believe it was scheduled to be released.
October of 2001, yeah. Just after the
Yeah.
attacks.
So after buildings crash into, after planes crash into buildings, wow, imagine buildings
Yes.
crashing into planes. After planes crash into buildings, we have a movie that's based around a mysterious
Plane
plane
accident, yeah.
engine crashing into a building.
Yeah. The film had a limited release in the month following the September 11th attacks, but was subsequently held back for almost a year for international release.
Yeah.
So yeah, they released it here on time, but held it back for the international audience.
That is creepy as hell if you think about it. There's so many creepy things that happened before September 11th that there's just some way people knew subconsciously something like that was going to happen.
I just think it was a coincidence. They happened to make a movie involving a plane crash just before, that happened.
Ah, the vortex at the end and stuff. It was all way too. I mean, did you ever see the I believe it was the Dream Theater live album that
Okay.
came out
No.
around that time? It was something about like oh man, it was something about like a hot time in the city or something like that, or and it was pretty much it showed the towers with like the same fire. It was
Wow.
crazy. And they did this before the attacks. They had to pull the album. I mean, it was like released around that time, and it was just like, oh fuck, we can't do this. And that's what happened here. They did it. They did this. That there was some weird subconscious thing going on, and they couldn't put it out.
Again, I don't think it was anything subconscious. I think it was just an unfortunate coincidence in both cases, Dream Theater and this movie.
There were actually a couple album covers. Dream Theater was one, but yeah, there was like another rap group that did the same thing too.
Anyway, in the beginning, when he wakes up in the road, kind of suggested to me that it was the loop happening before. What we're seeing is not the first iteration of the loop.
Well, I think it was sort of a dry run for it.
Possibly, yeah.
Because really, what everything I said with the plot summary, I really don't buy.
And that is one of the interesting things about this movie. And I saw this for the first time a few years back, maybe 5, 6 years ago. Didn't like it very much. It's grown on me, I'll give it that much. We'll find out just how much as the review progresses. But what I do like about it is that you can interpret it a lot of different ways.
Oh, definitely. And I don't think you're going to like my interpretation of
Incidentally, the Gyllenhaals should work together more. They have amazing chemistry.
Oh, of course.
Both Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal are in the film, and seeing them work together was I more or less like both of them as actors, but seeing them together was amazing.
I think if you had any other actor and actress in that role, it would have been annoying. It would have been stereotypical, but they're real brother and sister. So it was just, I mean, it felt like you were just watching them interact.
Also, really liked the effect of the engine hitting the house. It
Yes.
was sold really well. Although, when Donnie gets home from, being distracted by Frank the giant bunny, he just kind of pushes past this cop who just very weakly says no one goes in. Cop doesn't try to stop him. No one intervenes, no one tells him, that's really his house.
Well,
The cop just lets him go.
there's a lot of very strange and bizarre things that happen once that plane crashes. And my interpretation, of course, is that he's dead already at that point.
Interesting. There
That I mean, there was no
was no Frank.
time travel. There, I mean, it's a very much kind of a purgatorial setting, the whole thing.
Actually, I
And
don't hate that. I mean, I've probably gone on record with my distaste for the end of Lost, but I actually kind of like that with this. It's not my interpretation, but I like that.
think about it, though. Think about it. There were things like that where he just was able to push through the cop and the cop knows. But think about when he goes to set the house on fire, that he's able to leave the movie theater and come back and just get away with that entirely. Like, it just, I mean, things like that happening. It's things here he's supposed to do. I mean, and the other thing is, think about it. Patrick Swayze, the motivational speaker, at first it just seemed completely out of left field, but he calls him the Antichrist.
Yeah, I don't see how that fits with the already dead theory.
That's because he was the Antichrist.
Oh, okay, you did that literally.
Like, at first I was kind of like, wow, that is completely out of, oh, wait a minute.
I just thought he hated him because he's a creepy motherfucker, because
Well,
he was, even
right.
before we found out his secret.
On the surface, that completely works, but then when you look at it from the fact that this is kind of a purgatory, and he's this person who is leading these Christians astray into this
Okay,
bullshit New Agey thing,
yeah.
he is the devil.
Interesting. There's another odd thing that happens that kind of. It makes more sense in your interpretation. When Gretchen, I don't think you mentioned her in the summary, a new
No, I
girl at
didn't.
school who he ends up hooking up with, she walks into his English class and, she's asking, where should I sit? And the teacher, played by Drew Barrymore, who I've realized I really haven't liked in anything since E.T., says, sit next to the boy you think is the cutest. What
Well,
the
right.
fuck?
Yeah. It was the one aspect of his life he really wanted to explore,
Yeah, true.
and they let him, and he they let him see it. before finally having him ascend.
Also, the use of Head Over Heels just before that, the Tears for Fear song.
Yeah.
Very 80s, very, you know, montage-y. I mean, it wasn't a montage. It was practically a tracking shot, but it felt like a montage, you know, like those classic 80s things.
Okay. My one problem with this movie, I think.
Only one?
It's 1988.
Mm-hmm.
What is a key costume component that should have been in this film somewhere?
In 88?
In 1988.
I'm lost.
The hair was a bit small for 1988, was it not?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, hair was kind of starting to shrink at that. That was more like 85, 86. Beginning of hair metal.
What?
No, I'm thinking when I was in, like, you know, middle school, early high school, that was more of a
thing.
Holy
fuck! I remember girls with the hair. I remember dudes with hairspray back then.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you don't really see any hair metal guys. That's true.
You see, the girls don't have hair.
Yeah.
Like, high hair.
Yeah. Like, even by 88. I mean, it was going down by 88, but it was still pretty big. You're right.
All the girls have, like, flat hair and stuff. And I'm like, this... Dude, this was not 1988. Maybe it's just because we were from Jersey.
True. Good point.
You know, where the hole in the ozone layer really should be.
Also, another thing that kind of seemed out of sorts to me, his shrink was kind of hostile.
Well, the shrink, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out if she's more of like a Virgil or if she's God himself.
Interesting. Okay.
I couldn't quite figure that out, but she's trying to find out like what it was he wants to do and exploring, you know, his life. And in the end, the last session with her, you know, she confirms that, you know, the whole talk about atheism versus agnosticism. I mean, that I think that was when it finally clicked to me. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, there is a lot of the debate in this movie. In fact, when they start going down that road, Noah Wiley's character, his science teacher, says, you know, I'll get fired if I say any more.
Exactly.
You might be winning me over to this theory.
I mean, the more I thought about it, I'm like, everything does fit into that and point that direction.
And I just want to say again, the infomercial scenes were creepy as hell.
Of course. I'm not sure what Frank was trying to tell him to watch for in the infomercials. Because Frank actually tells him, don't miss this. It was kind of like, but nothing happens, dude. I mean, maybe there was some part of the message that he was sending.
I didn't catch it in the film, but there was a bit of trivia about how he smacked some kid on the butt in the infomercial, and that kid has another role in the film earlier.
Oh, okay.
So that could be it. It makes sense. Spelling it out pretty obviously there, that leads to his ugly secret.
I wish I'd seen this movie more than once before we did that. Because, yeah. Anytime you're dealing with a loop like this, yeah, you got to come back and watch it again.
Also, there were some tonal issues. The school flooding scene after the flooding was a little too comedic, I thought.
The what?
Particularly the school janitor, who I think he was a janitor or a maintenance guy, who was practically a comedic character.
Yeah.
That just
they always are,
aren't they? It was very sitcom at that point.
Yeah. The principal and not really having a clue as to what the fuck. Yeah.
Though I loved the emotional problems line. He's walking home with Gretchen and she says her father has emotional problems. He says, so do I. What kind of emotional problems does he have?
Oh, I've got some of those too.
I loved that.
Is it just me or does he remind you of a young John Lithgow?
A little bit. I have to say, I really like Donnie, the character.
Yes.
He really grew on me. Because he wasn't the typical brooding, troubled guy.
Well, right. He was, you know, he was kind of, you know, the cool guy, you know.
He was kind of a, you know, sarcastic smartass. I liked that.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta wonder if he was actually mentally ill or just bored.
Well, that's the thing. It felt like a lot of what you hear mentally ill people describing what they see a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, true. They were definitely making him appear mentally ill.
So, right, I was thinking along the way that, yeah, he's just crazy and that's it. But then I'm like, but wait a minute, the plane did hit the house. That can't be denied.
Although that's not necessarily what Frank was talking about. Frank said the world will end in 28 days and X amount of, hours and such. When in
Right.
actuality, there are just a couple of deaths that occur in the timeline of the film, or would have
Right.
occurred.
Well, there's two ways you could look at that. You could see, if you're looking at this from just a purely scientific standpoint, that the world is going to end because of the paradox.
Oh, okay. Well, the paradox was still there, though.
Or you could say the world that they've created for him is
Was gonna
going to
end
end.
if he doesn't
It was
accept
going
his
to
fate.
either way.
That makes sense. If he doesn't, because he's already pulled out of bed at that point. But Frank kind of causes that to happen.
I think the one message this movie actually does send, and again, people are not going to like this one, that there is no free will.
Yeah, that's why I have issue with it. I really detest any kind of determinism, fate, destiny, any of that shit.
Because in the end, it was nothing for him to accept. I mean, he had this mystery to solve about Frank, and really, the whole thing about him solving the mystery leads to the trouble in itself. If they had just stayed in the party, nothing would have happened, right? She would nobody you know they wouldn't have met the hoodlums again. I mean, Seth
Yeah, Seth Green.
Seth
Who
Rogen.
I'm or Seth Rogen, yeah, thank you. I have actually Seth Green in my notes. I was thinking of the wrong guy. I've never really been a fan of his, but I'm glad he went into comedy because he is a horrible dramatic actor. Or at least he was early on.
I liked him in Zack and Miri.
Yeah, okay, he was good in that, true.
Yeah. And 40-Year-Old Virgin.
I gotta say, I did like her calling out Gretchen, calling out his name, Donnie Darko, basically saying it sounds like some kind of superhero. It does sound very Stan Lee.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And the scene where he corrected his friends about the Smurfs. I'm a geek. I'm the guy who gets, as you all know, nitpicky about things. So I that's something I would do if I had had that knowledge at that, if I were in that scene and had that knowledge, I would have pointed all of that out.
I would have asked, why the fuck are we talking about the Smurfs?
Well, because it's 88 and they're teenage boys, and
Ah, true, true. Wait a minute, I was a teenage boy in 88. I would have said,
that's
why
true.
the
We
fuck are we talking about the
we were
Smurfs?
about the same age. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that is what grabbed me first from this movie,
We're actually about the same age as Donnie. That's true. This should have resonated more with us.
Well, that is why, because 88, and especially even like in the time of this movie, was such a weird pivotal moment of my life.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, really, why? And of course, seeing that, like, this doesn't look like 1988.
See, yeah, you have distinct memories of 88. I don't really.
Oh, really?
It was just another year for me. I'm trying to think. Let's see. I was 16. That would have put me in 10th, 11th grade.
It was
Yeah.
crazy that year. I mean, I had like my first girlfriend. My parents tried to move me down to Mississippi. I mean,
Oh,
there
yeah.
was.
You had a memorable year. See, I for my own reasons, I have very definite memories of 2001, especially around the time this movie was released.
It was insane, yeah.
I don't really remember 88 because it was just another year for me. There was nothing particularly interesting happening.
And
So
even
that's
if you
probably
were.
why I didn't focus on it didn't look like 88. It didn't really strike me because I don't remember 88 that well.
And if you put like the movie in terms of how my life was at that time, I had a distinct choice. I could allow events to happen to me, or I could say, fuck this. I'm going to, try to go as much of my own way as possible and be my own person.
So your life actually kind of, in a way, parallels the film.
Except there is free will.
Except for the there is free will and there's no time travel and all of that stuff.
And fuck yes, you do fight and make it for yourself, you know.
Yeah.
That is the lesson of 1988, because it would have been so literally disastrous if the other, side had won that year.
Oh, by the way, did you notice the boom in the shot in the second infomercial?
Of course, yeah.
Loved that, because it's just
Yes, of course. How could you not? How could you miss that?
they were just basically saying, yeah, these are kind of poorly produced before, before you start thinking that this motivational speaker person has his shit together.
And the other thing, personally, about 88, I'd even had a dream sometime, I'm saying, like in the last few years, about like a time travel scenario at that time. I mean, yeah, it was really like it was one of those years, man.
It's summer of 2001 for me. I totally understand.
Like, I think the parallel universe theory is, I don't buy into it at all. Because when it's another thing of saying,
Many worlds thing where, every choice branches off to its own
exactly,
universe.
it's pretty much the equivalent of saying the sun rotating around the earth kind of thing, because it's suggesting that your actions mean so much
That they
that there
spawn
could
another
be
universe, yeah.
an entire other universe just from what you didn't choose. That's insane.
I like it intellectually, but really it does kind of smack of wishful thinking.
Exactly. It's self-importance, which is what it is. But I would say if there were a parallel universe, 88 would be one of those points where things split.
Well, no, the theory is that at any point things split. Things split right now because I'm phrasing this differently than I am.
Right.
In another universe, I said that sent this sentence differently.
There's another universe where I had pancakes last night.
Exactly.
Like, why would there be a fucking other universe for that? Who went?
There's a universe I have in, the font in my text editor is on 21 instead of 20.
Comic Sans. That's what I use in the other universe.
Exactly. Oh, the point where it really got heavy-handed for me was, and I can never remember her character's name, Drew Barrymore, the English teacher, when she's getting fired, this little speech she gives about how, the teachers don't understand the kids.
Oh, yeah, that scene kind of. That scene hurt me too.
That's the point where I said, I don't think I've ever liked Drew Barrymore in anything since E.T.
We're about to the 10-year anniversary of when I was Drew Barrymore
Ah, there you go.
the principal. Only to me it wasn't as much of a surprise. It was more of like a this battle that you've been fighting was decided a long time ago, and we just never bothered to tell you until now. Oh, thanks.
Just a bit of trivia. I just happened to notice this in my notes. In the movie theater scene, Richard Kelly, the director, originally intended to have Donnie and Gretchen going to see Chud. However, there were problems finding out who owned the rights, so Sam Raimi came along and allowed them to use Evil Dead.
Okay, who is this guy that made this film? This is his first film, right?
I think this is his first, but he did a short before this. I looked at his IMDb. I did not recognize anything he's done since.
How the fuck did he get Drew Barrymore to bankroll this
I suspect she maybe just liked the script a
and
lot.
to get every other person on board that he got on board
Well,
for
he
this?
got lucky with the Gyllenhaals, because see, when cast, I have another bit of trivia. When casting for the role of Donnie's sister, it came to Kelly's attention that Maggie Gyllenhaal, who had a few film credits at the time, would be available for the shoot. The agent who proposed her casting reminded Kelly of the scene in Cecil B. Demented, which we've also reviewed, where she drank urine. Though Kelly was slightly hesitant toward the idea, he did like the way she drank the urine, and knew he wouldn't have to work too hard at creating a sibling rivalry between her and her actual brother.
So he had casted Jake first
Yeah,
and
and
just
he
cast
was
Maggie
very
along.
early. I think I said it was his first film. I don't. It wasn't. But it was certainly early in his career.
I mean, so Rogan, this is post Freaks and Geeks,
This is
of
his
course.
first film.
Oh, is it?
Seth Rogen's first film, yeah.
But I think it's post Freaks and
Well, yeah,
Geeks, right?
he had already done that, but that was TV. Yeah, this is his first film. Maggie Gyllenhaal was early in her career. Jake Gyllenhaal early. Surprising that that was 2001, because it seems like they've been bigger for longer.
Like Noah Wiley was
He
like
was coming off
ER.
ER at that point.
Like he was still doing ER, I
Is he
think
still on ER? Okay.
that show went on forever.
Yeah. Oh. But the cast changed several times, so I don't
Yeah, but
know.
he was like the main
Oh, was he?
guy
Oh, he
for
hung with it the longest.
like
Okay.
after Anthony Edwards left, he was pretty much the star.
Okay. So maybe it was another case where he liked the script, or he just wanted another shot at a movie because Pirates of Silicon Valley didn't do well.
Yeah. I thought this was before that though even.
Was
This
it
is
before
like
then?
I thought this is very early.
Okay, maybe this was his first big chance at a movie too.
Right. So I mean there's that McConnell the from Battlestar
Oh
Galactica.
yeah, Mary McDowell.
Yeah,
Or
McDonald, McDonald.
McDonald, that's it.
Yeah.
She's one of those actors, she's well known, but she, you know, I won't say she likes to work in a Ben Kingsley way, but she works a lot, not in the sense of she'll do anything for a buck, but you know, I get the feeling she's probably not that expensive.
I mean, she was a pretty essential part of Battlestar Galactica, I
Yeah, but that
thought.
was a little after this.
Oh yeah, it was.
So she wasn't a really a big name at this point.
That's kind of why I marvel at though that he got so many people before
Yeah.
they hit.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to come down to just having an amazing eye. And of course, while I'm talking about this, I'm looking up Noah Wiley, because yeah, ER ran from 94 to 2009.
Okay.
15 fucking years.
Oh, also speaking of people who were in other films we've reviewed, did the actor who played Frank look familiar?
He kind of did. I was
ID4.
wishing.
He was the kid who he was Randy Quaid's son.
Oh, okay.
It was bugging me when I saw him take the mask off. He looked so familiar and I couldn't place him.
You were right. Pirates of Silicon Valley was 99.
Okay, yeah, it was just before this and it did not do well, and I think that
That was
was
just a TV movie.
but that was gonna supposedly launch Noah Wiley's career.
Yeah.
And it didn't. So on to the ending of the film, which we have to spoil.
Oh, yeah.
We find out that there's this guy Frank who is well Frank is the bunny, but we also find out
Yes.
there's a real Frank in this timeline. And he's another student. And there's an incident where he accidentally kills Gretchen, and Donnie shoots him in the eye. And earlier we'd seen Bunny Frank take his mask off and his eyes messed up.
Right.
So, you know, that injury is what, and well, what killed him, and also was caused by Donnie. And this is the point where Donnie realizes he has to sacrifice himself, because he can see through these portals and they go up into the air where this plane's gonna be. And he finds out that his mother and sister are on the plane. So yeah, he's got to die so they won't end up on the plane. Which gives us a ginormous paradox.
Yes.
Because, okay, by sacrificing himself, he's stopping them from getting on the plane. Well, no, he's not stopping the plane, period. He's just stopping their presence on the plane. So there is no paradox.
And the fact that it comes back to a plane crash and everything was just.
I take that back. There is no paradox because the plane would have flown anyway. He just stopped his mother and sister from getting on it.
Yeah, he somehow gets thrown back in time. And of course, the end of the world, he wakes up, he's in the bed, and when he realizes where he's at,
Well, he knows what's going to happen at that
he
point.
just starts cracking up because it's like this is it. This was like, the big thing, but of course, it's completing the loop.
Now, your theory makes a lot of sense. I think you may have won me over. I had a slightly different theory, which is quite sillier, quite a bit sillier. As the interpretation I had is, and I say this half jokingly, the spirit of Frank, who he had killed, came back in time to get revenge on him by pulling him out of that timeline and putting him into another timeline that led to his mother and sister dying. Because the Frank in the bunny suit is dead Frank. It's after he was shot.
Yeah. But in the end, well, of course, the question would be, why would Frank go back in time to pull him out?
Because he shot Frank to get revenge for killing him by killing Donnie's
Wait, wait.
mother and sister.
Why would he have shot Frank?
Well, he shot Frank because Frank accidentally killed But
But he
in the other timeline, Frank wouldn't have killed Gretchen.
exactly. He wouldn't, they wouldn't have been there.
Right. Yeah, okay. Doesn't work.
I mean, the thing is, and the, one of the one of the little clues they give you is Grandma Death, who of course is pretty much your angel of death, because also her name was Sparrow, which is of course in some cultures the sparrow is what carries the spirit away.
Some it's a crow and some it's a sparrow, yeah.
Yeah, and she was pretty much sort of your, I guess you'd call him Charon, you know, the boatman.
Yeah. She's the one who tells him everyone dies alone.
Yeah, but yeah, she's pretty much carrying. It's her that turns out to have written the book, which of course is just insane. You know, like, oh yeah, by the way, and she writes the book to guide him through
Yeah.
the end.
That's true. Yeah, she's the. I don't think she's. The, Karen is a little bit much. Frank is almost Karen in a way.
Well, I think
Frank's is his. Frank is guiding him most of the time.
true. Frank does give him a lot of advice and orders to do things.
But Sparrow is that sort of pivotal character that gets him to where
Oh
he
yeah.
needs to be.
She writes the guidebook for
Yeah, true. True.
him.
Now, there were some interesting possibilities for casting. Well out of his teens, Vince Vaughn reportedly turned down the role of Donnie due to his age.
Well, yeah.
Mark Wahlberg was interested in the part, but apparently was only willing to play the part with a lisp.
Huh, he's a weirdo.
Jason Schwartzman was also strongly considered for Donnie, but dropped out due to scheduling issues. Tim
I could have
Robbins
seen him.
was, oh yeah, Schwartzman, I can definitely say. Tim Robbins was the first choice to play Eddie Darko, his father. Do you happen to know the name of the actor who played his father offhand?
Oh, it was a Holmes Osborne.
Holmes Osborne, thank you. Possibly one of the coolest names I've ever heard. I happened to notice that on IMDb and it really struck me.
Tim Robbins is an interesting choice because I think this movie was highly influenced by Jacob's Ladder.
Yes, definitely. And that might have been why he was the first choice. It
Yeah.
sort of would have been an implied next generation deal.
Yeah, it's I think it's a very similar
Yeah.
plot. But I think what's so much cooler about this than Jacob's Ladder is that on the surface, it could be something else. It could really be a time travel thing going on. But underlying, with all those things about the Antichrist and free will and God and atheism and agnosticism
Yeah.
and, you know, be people being on the right path with their lives, it's definitely more.
Yeah, your interpretation does make a lot more sense than pretty much anything I've ever heard about the film. Gotta call out the use of the song Mad World at the end.
I think that was the first time this w that was used, wasn't it?
Was well, not composed because it's an old Tears for Fears song, but this
Yeah.
version was created for the film, I believe.
Right, 'cause I mean
It,
the
it's
first time I've heard it was like Mad World from, you know, from
Donnie
Donnie
Darko.
Darko, so
Love that song. This version of it is one of my absolute favorite songs, and I love the use of it in the film. It's just after Donnie dies, and it shows everybody's reactions.
if it wasn't for the soundtrack and the election footage though, this would be any other time period.
True. Yeah, it really doesn't sit in any particular time, except for some of the music and the election references,
Yeah.
which seem a little crowbarred in, the election references.
No, that was huge back then.
Yeah, but it didn't need to be. It
Like,
didn't need to be in the film. It didn't really play into the plot at all.
I think it did because it was, I if I'm remembering right, that was one of the first like family values
Yeah,
thing
this was
that
just
election.
after Reagan. This was Bush 1's first election.
Well, Bush won, yeah, he needed to win over the far right of the party,
Would
and
and
he
Reagan had all had set all that stuff up.
and well, not even really, he just kind of did whatever he did, and everyone just went along with it for some reason, but no, Bush won needed to win them over because they weren't quite sold that he was a true conservative,
Because he
and
wasn't before then.
he was pro-choice and everything. But then in this election, he actually coined that phrase, I believe, family values. I believe.
Okay, so yeah, it was a big deal at the time, but I'm saying you could remove all of that election stuff and the movie still works.
Probably, yeah.
It could be any time, and the music doesn't necessarily set it at a time.
Well, the
Music,
music definitely, yeah. If the soundtrack and the
it
election
sets it,
are what makes this 1988. If it did not have those, then this could be a
yes.
timeless,
But I'm
it
saying
could
if
take
this came
place at
out
any time.
now, set now, and just happened to have those same songs in it, no one would blink an eye.
Really?
I don't think so.
It's a very heavy 80s soundtrack,
Except maybe Notorious, because that really does date it. That song is very dated.
I had forgotten that that came out in 86. For some reason, I thought that was like, wasn't that
92.
89? But no, that was 86.
Incidentally, there were some other rights issues in reference to the music. Some songs featured in the movie were substitutes for songs that the filmmakers wanted to use but were denied the rights to. The dance performance was originally set to West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys. That was substituted with, Notorious was used
So
to,
Notorious wasn't
in
the
its
first
place.
choice, huh?
And also, U2's MLK was used in the final scene instead of Mad World. I'm glad they went with Mad World.
Of course. Yeah, that was the other weird thing, that whole sparkle motion dance number. I mean,
Although it did lead to one of the most endearing or enduring references to the movie, because Doubt Your Commitment to Sparkle Motion has kind of outlived the movie. It's kind of
of
become more
course.
popular.
Yeah. But I mean, just that whole dance number is very weird in itself, if you think about it. And this is pre Little Miss Sunshine, of course, which kind of,
Way pre.
yeah.
Also, another weird legal issue. During conversations about sex with his therapist, the script had Donnie Darko fantasizing about Alyssa Milano. This had to be changed to Christina Applegate due to legal reasons. Apparently, Alyssa Milano would have sued. Just to finish out all my trivia, rabbits and the number 8 he feature heavily in the film. Rabbit references and the number 8. Also, the whole cellar door thing when Pomeroy, his English teacher, Drew Barrymore's character, says, someone once said that a linguist once said that cellar door is the most beautiful phrase in the English language. That was actually said by Tolkien.
Huh.
He said it is more beautiful than sky, and far more beautiful even than the word beautiful. And it's not the meaning. If you divorce it from the meaning, it's just the sound of it.
Yeah. You're right. I think I remember that now. It's from the is that from The Hobbit?
I don't know offhand. It doesn't say. I kind of got the impression he just kind of said it outside of his fiction.
Hmm. And I'm not familiar with the short story that they were going over
Nor
in
am I.
class about destruction.
Destruction is a big theme in the film.
Yeah.
It begins with a crash. So I think it was just for to reference that. I don't know if it
It
was just
does
to
kind of
fit in with the
spell the
theme.
theme out of the film. Yeah, I mean,
Exactly.
destruction can be used for something beautiful. And that's pretty much what happens here. It's the destruction of his life, and in the process, they somehow repair the lives of others by destroying his life. Which I'm not all that clear on. Like that ending, the ending really leaves me like a very confused.
Well, sacrificing himself made it so his mother and sister wouldn't be on the plane because they'd be busy mourning him.
Well, not that part, but after the engine, back when I think you're on the normal timeline,
Okay.
when you're back in normal Earth and the engine crashes into the house. Engine of a plane that no one seems to know what happened to forever.
No one talks about what happened to the actual plane,
Right, it's
the
a
rest
very
of it.
weird mystery there that's left unexplained in the entire film.
Because the plane
But
probably crashed. It's not the original.
after that, Gretchen, was it?
The girlfriend.
Is what's that?
The girlfriend.
Yeah, she and her and his mom
I
sort
was
of
just
have
going to
this
bring this
moment.
up. They kind of wave to each other. I don't remember them meeting in the timeline of the film.
Right.
How would they have known each other? I
Well,
mean, this is a
yeah.
different timeline. The implication is they still remember each other even though the timeline has changed. But they didn't meet each other in that alternate timeline.
Exactly. They never meet each other in the regular in the film's timeline. And I mean, she never knew. It was very strange how it
Yeah,
ended
that bugged me.
because there's more to this that's not being explained. And I almost, I kind of wonder, like, what her story is,
Gresham? Yeah.
Yes.
She had an interest. They teased an interesting backstory for her.
Yeah. Was that real? Was that, I mean, was this just for his,
Going by your theory, she was the perfect pairing for him.
Right.
They were both troubled and alone.
And yet she did not seem that way, when the plane had crashed.
True.
She just seemed like a normal girl, kind of just riding her bike and, oh, what's going on here? Like her demeanor was different, her clothes were different.
Which, again, going by your theory, now we're back in reality.
Like, yeah, she was a completely different person from, like, her hair seemed lighter, I think. I mean, she was just like a completely different person from how she was in the movie. And yeah, they have this very, and the boy too. The boy kind of was like looking and waving too, and they were just kind of looking. I mean, they felt, you could just say they felt bad for the mom losing her son, but I don't know. It just seemed like there was more to that than let on. I wonder if I had the director's cut to this,
Well, how long was it?
it was over 2 hours.
You may have, because I watched the theatrical version, it was just under 2 hours.
Yeah. And you know what? I did not mind at all. I mean, really, it took me a while to get into it. Like, I don't think I really got into this until about 45 to 50 minutes in, when until it got to the, time travel theories started getting spouted about, and I was like, oh.
All right, so I'm pretty much done with minutes.
Yeah, I am too.
On to sequels and remakes. And yes, there is
Yeah.
stuff for sequels and remakes for this.
How could there be a sequel?
A 2009 sequel, S Darko, centers on Sam, Donnie's younger sister.
Okay.
Sam begins to have strange dreams that hint at a major catastrophe. Donnie Darko creator Richard Kelly has stated that he has no involvement in this sequel, as he does not own the rights to the original. Chase, DeVay Chase, who played his sister in the original film, also plays her in S. Darko. Chase and producer Adam Fields are the only creative link between it and the original film. The sequel received extremely negative reviews. I've seen it. I didn't like the original film. This is even worse.
Huh.
I mean, I didn't like Donnie Darko when I first saw it, is what I'm saying. And this was even this. It's laughably bad. I mean, it might be worth watching for that reason.
Oof.
But we have different takes on that, as Resident Evil proved. On the slightly more interesting side, Marcus Stern, associate director for the American Repertory Theater, directed a stage adaptation of Donnie Darko at the Zero Arrow Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the fall of 2007. It ran from October 27th until November 18th, 2007, with opening night scheduled near Halloween. An article written by the production drama team stated that the director and production team planned to embrace the challenge of making the fantastical elements come alive on stage. In 2004, Stern adapted and directed Kelly's screenplay for a graduate student production at the American Repertory Theater Institute for Advanced Theater Training.
I could see it. I could see this being a wonderful
Some of the effects I don't
stage.
know about, though. Like, how do you get the portal across? Most of it works.
You could do something with light.
Yeah, I suppose so. Also, how do you do a car accident? Someone getting run over by a car on stage. You'd have to adjust that and have her killed some other way.
we haven't brought this up. Is this the first time in any sort of literature where the deus ex machina kills?
That's a good point, and it's called out too. Donnie calls out the deus ex machina.
The deus ex machina, and he just killed her.
Interesting. But I actually would love to see a theatrical version of this, just to see how they
I would
pulled it
too.
off. All right, on to brains.
On to brains.
I'm still not sure if I like it, and I don't know if your interpretation, as much as it makes sense and as much as you've probably won me over toward it, really makes me like it anymore.
Yeah, just like I was like, John's not gonna like this.
But I think it should be seen, and I think, it needs to be seen to make up your own mind. I'm going for.
I feel like Chef. What I tell you is gonna piss you off. This is the dream. You're still in
Yeah,
jail.
it is kind of that.
I'm going five. This
Wow.
was just bananas. Anytime you can come up with this many interpretations of it and still have enough to back you up on each side, and just the acting is just, I'd say, perfect.
Most of it. A therapist is a little iffy, but. And there are a couple others that were, Seth Rogen isn't great because he's not a great dramatic actor.
Well, he's not, he's a
But most of the
background
cast
character,
was
pretty
spot
much.
on.
And the therapist, I really want to get back to watch this again just to see what happens in the end with the new one, with, after formulating the interpretation and
Yeah,
what
true.
he's going through.
But you're right. The rest of the cast was brilliant, particularly the Gyllenhaals.
Yeah.
And even Jenna Malone,
Swayze.
probably her best work. Swayze did well. That's
And
true.
this was a weird time for Swayze because his real career as like the money making bankable star was pretty much over at this
He
point.
didn't live much longer.
Eight
He died shortly after this,
like
didn't
8 years.
he? Oh, was it that long? Was it 2009? Okay.
He got sick shortly after this, I think,
Okay.
and then made a comeback with that one show, and then it took him finally.
All right, so what have we learned?
Well, we learned that Patrick Swayze is in fact the devil.
And
Never turn your back on
I learned that feces are baby mice.
him.
It's a line from the movie. I got a
Cute.
particular kick out of
Aww.
that one. All right, so until next time when we'll be reviewing Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I wish I could be talking about the series, but no, the movie. With Paul Reubens and
Of
Rutger
course.
Hauer. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoyed the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. We'd also greatly appreciate that. Of course, we appreciate all of our listeners as is, but of course, more would be better. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through 2 weeks from now, Star Trek: The Motion Picture, the beginning of your penance.
We're not doing that in all the Star Treks in a row, are we?
No, we're not doing the Star Treks in a row. That was part of your deal. You stipulated you didn't want to do them in a row. You wanted to break them up, but we're starting it with that. Also, I guess that's going to count as our Nimoy tribute. Rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy.
Oh man. Well, you know what? I didn't feel all that sad about him because I mean he was 83,
Oh yeah.
but he will be missed, of
Oh,
course.
absolutely. I've never really been a big Trek fan, but Spock is one of my favorite characters of all time. And Nimoy himself was a great man.
And actually, to really go to look back on his career, I really want to rewatch Fringe. He
Yeah.
had such a
I was
small
thinking
role
the
in
same
it,
thing.
but it was so good.
Yeah.
He was so good in it.
Also, we have to, add some stuff to the list after, probably next week after Buffy. I'm thinking we do a request binge because I was checking the request form. We're pretty backed up there.
Oh, really? I was going to say we could do a Nimoy tribute and do like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay, we can do that too. Do a two-parter Nimoy tribute, and then we got to do a request binge.
Yeah.
We got to clear that out of it. Incidentally, to the person who requested the Star Wars Holiday Special, I'm tempted to do it, but fuck you.
Is such an appropriate response. Don't you dare be offended by it.
Yes. If you've ever seen it, you understand that response. Of course, you'll also find the request form if you'd like to leave us a request. We'll get to it, unless it's the Star Wars Holiday Special, which we'll probably end up reviewing anyway, just
Probably
because
will.
we can rip it apart. And you also find the recommendations list. I was really unsure if this one was going to make it, but it did pretty soundly. You can also email us, zombietangent@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the Alpha Numerically Challenged.
You can watch the Star Wars Christmas special.
414-368-9861. Always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And of course, until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Maybe you should be the one in therapy. Then mom and dad can pay someone $200 an hour to listen to all your thoughts, so we don't have to.
Sometimes I doubt your commitment to zombie takeout.
You know, after 5 Resident Evil movies, I think I've proven my commitment to zombie takeout.
Well played.
Thanks.